When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello out there, everyone. Welcome back to None But the Brave, a presentation of Evergreen Podcasts. I am Hal Schwartz, and as always, I'm here with my great buddy, Flynn McClain. Flynn, what's happening?
We got a lot of stuff going on right now, Hal, but let's start with the fun you had last night, Hall of Fame.
Big night here in Los Angeles, Microsoft Theater. The Rock and Roll Hall of Fame induction ceremony for 2022. It was really a cavalcade of stars. And of course, for our listeners and for me and everyone I was with, the biggest thing is that Mr. Springsteen was there and he was in fine form during the Jimmy Iovine segment where he inducted Jimmy into the Hall of Fame, as we've come to expect now on these speeches that he makes at this particular ceremony. It was filled with warmth and humor. He gave Jimmy a little bit of business, of course. And they were both very, very happy. And the show ran very, very long, 6 hours. We almost thought that maybe Bruce was not going to do his scheduled performance because it was 12:40 in the morning and he had yet to appear. But fortunately, he did take the stage and perform.
Well, yeah, I had heard this, that he had sound checked. So you knew I knew, but you told me not to tell you. But I'm glad you stuck around. And it sounds like that was a hell of a performance at the end there. Jerry Lee Lewis's Great Balls of Fire.
Well, not just Great Balls of Fire. It started with about 30 seconds of High School Confidential, which I had never seen. And this song, I think, is really a tremendous amount of fun. And then it transitioned into Great Balls of Fire. Bruce looked and sounded fantastic. You know, we talked about it with Brandon Shaw when he was on at the Killers performance at the Garden, and I have to say the same thing. It really is remarkable. Now, I'm sure he gets worked on before he goes on the stage. That's part of the job. But man, his voice sounds amazing, and he just looks great. It gave me so much hope for the tour. Any idea that maybe he slowed down, and I'm sure movement wise it'll be a little bit different than in the past, but he looks ready to go, and he was at full force last night. Granted, it was only 5 minutes, but very enjoyable.
Well, let's hope the rest of the E Street Band is ready to go come February 1st, like it sounds like Bruce is. Now, speaking of the band, you told me Roy was on the piano for this performance.
Yes, he was. Roy was on piano. The backing band was the Zac Brown Band. John Mellencamp also joined Bruce on stage for that. Roy also looked good, and he and Bruce and Mellencamp walked off the stage when the performance was over, all arm in arm. They were very, very pleased. As we know, Bruce and Mellencamp have an ever-growing friendship. They seem to be having a ball. It was really great to see, and it was the final performance of a very lengthy but very satisfying evening. The inductees all performed. I thought Lionel Richie, who, speaking of our conversations about 1984 and 1985, he was fabulous. He played Hello, Easy with Dave Grohl on lead guitar, and then wow, All Night Long, and that place was jumping. So it was a great night. Bruce seemed to be in great spirits, and it's going to air on HBO on November 19th. No doubt the Jerry Lee Lewis tribute is going to be in there. Certainly part of the Iovine speech will be in there, and you're not going to want to miss it. Oh, one other thing. Bruce was also very, very funny in the Alan Grubman video package when Grubman was inducted. Mellencamp did the speech there, but there was a video that ran before that, and it ended with Bruce saying, "Alan, you're in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. Holy shit!"
Yeah, I think somebody pointed out there's nothing less rock and roll than an attorney. So, yeah, it's a little wild for a lawyer to be in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, but I guess he played a major role with a lot of rock acts, making sure that they got paid, and I guess that paid off, so to speak. But was Lionel Richie inducted as a solo artist here?
He was last night, yes.
Okay, all right. And it sounded like the Duran Duran performance was pretty cool too. But speaking of artists from 1984, 1985, but we don't have to do a whole spiel on every artist in there.
No.
But it was a fun night, and sounds like the editor is going to have a real challenge cutting it down from 6 hours to two to fit on HBO's programming schedule.
I assume that HBO, I don't know if it's two or is it two or three? We'll have to check. But yes, there's going to be quite a bit of editing, and there were magnificent performances across the entire show. Duran Duran was great. I particularly enjoyed Ordinary World. So
yes,
the other people, I'd never seen Eminem before. So that was pretty cool.
Okay. And Dolly Parton, I assume was just wonderful as well.
It's a really nice evening for the talent, and very lucky for any of us who were there. Dolly was in great spirits herself. She wrote a rock song special for the occasion because, as has been reported, she wasn't quite sure if she should be inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, and it was quite amusing. So it was a great night, and the lead story for us, of course, is that Bruce is ready to go. He's definitely – February 1st is going to be a good night.
Good to hear. Looking forward to it. And that's not the only thing going on. Bruce sat in with Howard Stern for, 2 hours and 15 minutes last week? First part of, I guess, the Only the Strong Survive media tour. That's the only stop so far. But that was a hell of an interview, Hal. What were your takeaways?
I thought that it was fantastic. Howard is a tremendous interviewer, and he really got a lot of stuff out of Bruce. Now, for people like us, I don't know that Bruce said anything that broke new ground, but Howard's audience is not us. And he brought out the entire Springsteen story, his relationship with his father. I think Bruce was emotional throughout the interview, and the performances were really, really great. So it's a very enjoyable thing. And if you have Sirius, you should definitely go and either listen to it streaming if you haven't heard it already, or watch the complete video which they've posted. I don't think we're going to spend too much time here breaking down everything that Bruce said, although he did confirm our reports of the vast amount of material recorded for Only the Strong Survive. I think he said there were 40 songs left on the cutting room floor.
Wow, so that's 55 songs at least that that's been confirmed to be recorded. So, yeah, a lot of room for volume two, and that's going to be fun. Let's see what happens with that, obviously.
Greetings from Evergreen Podcasts. We're rolling out a listener survey, and we want to hear from you. The information in the survey will help us gather statistics and, in turn, make our shows more appealing to advertisers. I know most people don't like ads, but this is one of the only ways our shows make money and help keep their lights on. We promise it will only take a few minutes, but the impact on our podcasts will be tremendous. As a token of our appreciation, we'll randomly select one lucky participant each month to win an exclusive merchandise package from Evergreen Podcasts. Head to evergreenpodcast.com/listenersurvey to help a show and possibly get some free stuff for doing so. We can't thank you enough for the support. Now back to the show.
What was it like to be there for historical sports moments and unforgettable performances? To be behind the scenes? On PressBox Access, you'll hear from me, Todd Jones, and other sports writers about their experiences with the greatest athletes, coaches, and sports events of the past half century. We'll share some stories behind the stories, some big, some small, and some we've only told each other. Let us buy you a round on PressBox Access.
And the other thing going on is that Bruce just released for the first Friday series from Nugs, Asbury Park, November 26, 1996. And you were there. I was kind of there. I was outside. And but yeah, it was a very special show. It was one of my favorites listening to when Crystal Cat released it back in 97. Just another wonderful performance from that three-night stand. They already released the first night, November 24th. But this one, you got some additional guests, and you got more of a special encore. I Don't Want to Go Home being the headliner there, followed by Rosie, and of course the fact that that Patty and Susie were there, adding a lot of texture to a good chunk of the set, just makes this one very, very special.
Yeah, this was a special night. I was there with your wife, and wait. So when you were outside,
yeah,
you were on the drop line. You were on the drop line.
Oh well, thank you for bringing up such a wonderful memory, Hal. Yes, we were on the drop line. We had gotten on the drop in on the drop on Sunday night, the first night, and so we said, okay, let's go up again. Let's give it a shot. Let's call in sick to work. I hope none of my former bosses are listening. But we went up. We were in the drop line all day, and actually, the drop line ended. They cut it off right in front of us. Oh, literally so right painful. In front of us. Three more tickets that were released and were inside. But no, we were on the outside looking in. And we heard a good chunk of it. Obviously, the doors aren't exactly, they don't give the best sound. But we were able to hear when Steven came out for I Don't Want to Go Home and Spirit and Rosie. And actually, we could hear Born in the USA really, really nice. But still, rather be on the inside, but this more than makes up for it.
We've talked about this show quite a bit when we've talked about the archive series, and it was one that we knew would be released. It had to be released. It's one of the greatest nights, I think, in the history of the shore in terms of music. And yeah, very, very sad that you were outside. I'm sorry.
It's okay. I've made amends with it. I've let it go. I have closure now with this official release.
They did a good job here, as they've been doing recently. Al Schiller, I think it's mixed well. It's a great listen. This is a must-have show. And the performances this night, they were off the charts. I close my eyes and I think back, and just the size of that theater, that 1,500-seat theater, that we saw this in that tiny theater. It just blows my mind now, thinking about it. We're 26 years later. And the set list was pretty much a mix of the first two nights, except he added in the wonderful version of All That Heaven Will Allow with Richard Blackwell on the percussion. And then, as you mentioned before, I Don't Want to Go Home to open the encores. Now, the story of this show is the encores. It was one of the greatest segments of music I've ever witnessed. There was such joy on that stage. And it was very surprising because, of course, Bruce was on this tour. He was playing solo every night, even though the nights before he had brought out Danny, he'd brought out Susie and Patty. What took place in the encores, that was a full band. Yes, they were playing acoustic, but there was a full complement of instruments on that stage. And it's a one-time only performance of not only I Don't Want to Go Home, Spirit in the Night and Rosalita, just tremendous. And as you noted, when Steve walked out on that stage, there was bedlam in that theater.
Now, he came on after Bruce sang the first verse, right?
Yeah, it was a total surprise. Now, surprise for me. I'm sure there were people in the audience who knew that he was there. I was certainly nowhere near as informed then as we may be now, but it was wonderful. And someone had remarked on Twitter about how special it was because the E Street Band had been fired. And I said, you really have to remember that Steve had left the band in 84. And even if the band had reconvened in 1996, people talked about hopefully the band would come back. We didn't know if they would. But if they did, it wasn't sure that Steve would be in the band when they returned. So this performance, we didn't know when we would see something like this again. And it was so memorable. I just listening to this show, and I was excited that it was finally coming out. Listening to this show over the weekend was really a treat for me.
Yeah, and going back to Steve playing with Bruce, I figured at the time, who knew when it was going to happen again? And now it's, I got goosebumps listening to the crowd's reaction when Steve came on. And at the time, as I said, you never knew when that was going to happen again. And of course, 2.5 years later, it's happening. It happened on a nightly basis for a good chunk of the next 20 years. But yeah, it hadn't happened very often at all over the previous 12 years. But it was that was quite the moment. If you want to take one moment from this show, I guess that's it.
For sure. And there are some all-time performances here. The Hard to Be a Saint. This was the first time in Asbury that Hard to Be a Saint had been played, I think, since 81. It debuted during night two of The Stand, which was the one night I didn't see. And I was devastated. I'd never seen Saint in the City, of course. And I was like, oh man, I can't believe I missed that. And then we came back the next night, the 26th, and he did do Sane in the City. It was amazing. And the Tougher Than the Rest is just fabulous. And the pairing of Shout Out the Light and Born in the USA, what a powerhouse. This is one of those nights that you're just not going to get repeated in every respect, the set list, the quality of the performance. It was a one-of-a-kind thing and just so lucky to have been there.
Yeah, Shut Out the Light. I think he had done it. He did it every night of that stand because he had Susie there to add the fiddle. And I remember I had seen him a few weeks earlier, actually the month earlier out in the Northwest, and he actually audibled out of Shut Out the Light back to Brothers Under the Bridge, and I was pretty, actually kind of disappointed. So it was good to see that first night in Asbury, and then obviously this recording as well.
We should also make mention, I think, of When You're Alone, which of course has been so rarely played, and it had been played that one time at the Count Basie benefit show in 93, where it was really, really well done. And here, the performance is, it's stunning. And there are so many of the songs here that you look at, and we, of course, we say this so much, why doesn't this stuff get played more often? But some of these songs, When You're Alone, it's just amazing. What has it been played? I think 10 or 12 times total.
If that, I think it wasn't played after this tour until Devils and Dust. And obviously that hasn't been played since.
Yeah, so this is a treat, and I'm sure a lot of our listeners have already heard the show either through the fantastic Crystal Cat bootleg that we've all had for years, or now with the archive. If you have not picked up the archive, I couldn't recommend it more.
Exactly, and talking about the show, this was quite a rambunctious crowd, to say the least. They bordered on rowdy, but they more or less stayed respectful. There wasn't too much yelling during songs, except for that one woman who, when Bruce said, "I've been around a time or two," and Tougher, and she went, "Uh-huh." That was one of the funnier moments of the show. And then some people kept trying to engage him, but he was able to shut it down pretty quickly.
Well, that was one of the things, because it was such an intimate performance in this tiny theater. But he was playing tiny theaters for much of the tour, but the structure and his demeanor did not allow for crowd participation. If you did that stuff during a regular Joe show, we know what he said. He told you to shut the fuck up.
Yeah, but this was more of a hometown crowd, and it didn't quite have that, the intensity of a normal show. I mean, it was intense in different ways, but it wasn't a typical intense Joe show. And so people kind of reacted in a different way than they did, say, and at most of the other shows. Now, he did kind of bring back Susie and Patty in at the show in Nashville just about 3 or 4 weeks later, and I was there. But yeah, you're right. It was special to see Shut Out the Light and Two Hearts with Susie and Patty. But yeah, it just wasn't the same as it was in Asbury.
Yeah, and I'll end with a couple of people were talking about, is this the best Joe show? I think my point was, I don't really consider this to be a Joe show. Yes, it took place during 1996, during the actual tour, but it varied so much from the basic show that it's sort of adjacent to the tour and a very special occasion. I hope they have it. To me, the best Joe shows occurred sometime the month before, the best pure Joe shows, whether it was in the Midwest or the show I saw in Fresno. If they have one of those, they should get them out, because that was really when the tour was in the locations where the songs take place and really, really focused.
Well, this is the sixth release from the Joe tour. I actually disagree with you on that. I consider this part of the Joe tour. It was during the tour. Yeah, it was a little bit different. He had some special guests, but I still consider it part of the tour. But this is the sixth release from the Joe tour from Nugs. We got three normal shows, and now we have three special shows. We have Freehold from November 8th, and then the first and now the third nights in Asbury from late November.
Yeah.
So I don't know when we're going to get another Joe show. Obviously, I think they're going to pause this First Friday series when the tour starts, And we don't know when, exactly what kind of schedule they're going to have going forward with that, at least in terms of archives. But I think we only have about three, and if we're really lucky, four releases left before the assumed pause. And it'll be interesting to see what we get over the next 3 or 4 months.
Yeah, especially for Christmas. And I'm going to go back to listening to this one and remembering these nights, really very special for me. So again, I'm just glad that it's been released.
Yes, tremendous release. And even if you're on the outside looking in, it's still a fun listen.
So painful. Sorry about that.
It's okay. I made up for it when I got into the Pat King benefit.
That was also a very special night.
True.
So let me just wrap up by saying None But the Brave is a presentation of Bull Market Entertainment. We're on Evergreen Podcasts. If you wish to reach out to us, check us out on our website, nonebutthebravepodcast.com, or on Twitter at NBTBpodcast.
So for Hal Schwartz, I'm Flynn McClain saying thanks for listening, and we'll see you further on up the road.
Thank you so much. We'll be seeing you.
Hey, this is Steve Choi, host of the Musicians Guild podcast, part of the Sound Talent Media podcast network. Within the four walls of the Musicians Guild, we'll be discussing the habits, idiosyncrasies, experiences, and general psychology of my friends and peers all involved with music in various capacities. Listen and subscribe at soundtalentmedia.com.